Hey, Margaret.
Yeah, Anton?
You know what people don't talk about enough?
What?
How the on-the-table scene expertly encapsulates Hilarishka's relationship to secrets.
Ooh.
Welcome to People Don't Talk About Young Royals. I'm Anton. My pronouns are he, they.
And I'm Margaret. My pronouns are they, them.
And we're people here to discuss the show our friends are sick of hearing us talk about.
If that sounds like you, stick around. If your friends sent you this podcast out of a desperate attempt to get you to watch Young Royals, take this as a sign.
Go watch Young Royals, then come back to this podcast.
Anton, what are we talking about today?
Today we will be having a thematic discussion of Season 1, Episode 2, narrowing in on specifically what Young Royals says about the monarchy, class, and Wilhelm's place within the royal family.
Woohoo! I never know what to say for these because it's not really a woohoo kind of episode.
Yeah.
All right. In this discussion, we won't be summarizing the plot of the episode because we already did that. If you need or want a refresher, head back 10 episodes in our feed to our most recent This Week at Hilarishka for a full breakdown. This episode discussion will likely be all over the place, so strap in. You've been warned.
Okay, so I wanted to start with on the table because, I don't know, it's, even though, especially in the first episode cycle, we really made privilege punishment about the royal family, I think this is really the place where we can also talk about just class really directly and like things we haven't talked about yet.
Absolutely.
Because it's all a spectrum. Like, I mean, even though like Wilhelm is very much like a cut above all the other students around him, like they're still all swimming in the same water and it's all very, very connected. So
I love the swimming in the same water reference because I spend my entire day in an aquarium. So I was like, oh, my fishies.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. Do you, without me explaining what I'm saying, do you get what I mean by like the relationship to secrets? Or should I really do. Yeah. Because, and I mean, and this is not an original thought. I'm pretty sure I got it directly from Lisa, an interview from Lisa that I watched years ago.
What a woman.
But, which I realize I don't know if we've ever fully defined who Lisa is on this podcast. I think we just assume that people would know.
But not everybody is as crazy as we are.
Lisa Ambjorn is the person who created the show. Yes. And first drafts, I'm pretty sure, every single episode. So there's that. And it's like crafted out the structure of the show for the most part. And is like the main storytelling force behind the show.
What a woman.
Yeah. But in talking about like the research that she did for this, for the first season, especially, is when she did the bulk of her research to like understand this world, to try to make Hilarishka as believable as she can. I know she talked about how it was actually really difficult because, as is kind of implied in Young Royals, but because we're kind of on the in group, it's hard to tell. Like, this is a very, I mean, but also we kind of get Wilhelm talking about that in this episode. Like, this is a very insular, like, social group, like society, like when you were this rich, in any society, but like specifically in Sweden, like you don't talk to people about what your life is like. Like you don't talk to the regulars. You don't talk to sosas, as August would say disparagingly. Like you don't talk to normal people. The on the table scene, I know, comes from the very few people who went to boarding schools like Hilarishka who were willing to talk to Lisa. Like, take it off your bingo card, everyone. As someone who watches a lot of reaction episodes, reaction content.
We should make a drinking game.
I have seen so many reactors be like, that can't be real. Is that real? Someone tell me if that's real. And then it's always fun to see that someone's already beat me to the punch of being like, yep, that's real.
kind of gross.
Yeah. It is. And like, it is very much like, on the one hand, like, I can definitely tell, like, it was written to something that the writers like knew that normies like us would be like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And let me tell you, first time watching it, I was like, what the hell?
Yeah. And but I don't know. I might be kind of like this might be being colored by how much I've like thought about this show. Or this just might say a whole lot about me that I might not intend. But I don't know how shocked I was. I definitely was taken aback, but especially for the amount of time that I've thought about this, especially ever since I heard like Lisa explain that scene,
mm-hmm.
I feel like it just made sense to me.
Now it makes sense, but the first time I watched it, I was like, what is happening?
No, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. But I think it's hard to really put myself back into that place of, because I think also in that, when you're first watching it, you're definitely very much like thinking about the Wilhelm of it all and like thinking about like,
still am
in terms of his discomfort that immediately plays a part in that scene and kind of becomes its like focal piece at the end of it, of like, we're introducing this cultural tradition, and then immediately we're like seeing how Wilhelm fits into it,
mm-hmm.
which essentially is what most of what I want to talk about like this entire episode.
Hell yeah.
Because it's like, we get one scene with Eric, which is like our biggest connection to the royal family, but like everything else is like August's influence on Willa, or like August's presence.
Mm-hmm.
But for those of you who may not have given this as much thought, or you're still just scratching your head, the idea behind the on the table scene, which I feel like I'm taking forever to get to my point, but like,
it's okay.
Yeah. Is that this is a place that doesn't have secrets, mm-hmm. because secrets breed division and you want to maintain a unified front.
Yep.
You want to make sure that everything is out in the open so that, I mean, in the most literal terms, and I don't know if everyone is thinking like this, but like, it in the like most cut and dry terms, it's so that everyone has the information that they need to make informed decisions about who they're going to marry.
Damn. But yeah.
Like, without a doubt, a lot of these people are going to go on to marry each other. And that's something that I do not think is thought about enough.
It makes me feel a little icky.
It's something people don't talk about. Because it's like, this society is only so, this like upper class society is only so big.
It makes it sound real incestuous.
I mean, and it is. And yeah. That's, I think, something that On Table Scene is meant to highlight, is yeah. that it's like, you kind of need to know who has hooked up with who so that things are basically, it's like, you're going to be around these people for the rest of your lives. You can't afford to have things be like buried secrets.
God, can you like, imagine me sitting at this table? Oh, God, I'd be so uncomfortable.
I can't, hypothetically, it's like, I don't know why maybe this is the they of it all, but I'm putting myself in the perspective of the queerness of it all. I'm putting myself in the perspective of one of the girls. Like, it's like, if I am someone who eventually goes on to marry Nils, knowing that like he and Maddie have some sort of history is valuable information in a in a way I want to say is very fucked up in its own way.
Yeah.
But like there is a logic to it that I can't really deny, honestly. Yeah.
I also think that part of it, because you were mentioning how Lisa was like they weren't talking to normal people. This like idea has been kind of breached that like while students at Hlershka may gossip with each other, that doesn't leave the walls of the school. So like while there's not secrets among like the students because of traditions like this and because it's a boarding school with how many kids at it, that is still kept separate from outside of Hlershka.
And I think in terms of secrets, I think that's mostly been only implied at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of like, if we take August as the most extreme example of what a Hlershka student thinks about the outside world, which he essentially is in the show, like not even letting them be invited places, I think definitely paints a picture of a society that is meant to be exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is meant to be like, we don't let in outsiders because outsiders just don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think I brought this up like in Simon's episode. It's very like, and it was also, it's like most of my information about rich people comes from Gossip Girl. So it's very, very, and like very different elite. But it's also like, not to be that guy, but all rich people kind of act the same, from what I can tell. Like rich people behavior has become like a thing and like a meme at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since, like, again, like Villa says, like everyone knows everyone and like everyone knows everybody's business.
Mm-hmm.
Like he says that and we have seen proof of that.
Oh, 100%.
And like, in this environment, it's, I can't even think of a proper metaphor for it, but it's like firm walls on the outside, but like completely open on the inside. You are in everybody's business, but it like has a firm barrier to like leaving.
Mm-hmm.
your people, quote unquote, which I don't know. I think it's On the Table is so good at really, I mean, not only setting up this dynamic to let, so that a lot of it, I mean, once you think about it long enough, just like makes a whole lot of sense. It also just like establishes like this is just the norm for this society, and then you put Willa in the middle of it.
Oh yeah.
And he doesn't find this. He gets uncomfortable, but I think there's a degree to which I think part of him does understand why it exists.
Because
I feel like he would be even more uncomfortable if he was completely taken off guard. But also, like, taking this cultural idea about secrets and putting a queer character in the middle of that.
Mm-hmm. It's honestly a nightmare show.
Fuck, man.
Yeah, it's like, a nightmare show. Big time.
It's intersections like that that make this show one of the best shows I've ever seen.
Oh, big time.
Because it's just like fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, I'm fascinated at this intersection between wealth and queer identity. And in, like, we haven't really gotten a vibe check of Hlershka in terms of what their stance on LGBTQ rights is as a whole up to this point. And so with that knowledge, like, I would assume that we are kind of largely as in the dark about how people Hlershka feel about queerness as Villa is and Simon are.
Yeah.
But also, Villa is coming from a very, like, specific perspective that I think is probably, he's probably just, like, carrying over what his, the like, kind of just sense he's gotten from his family is over to, like, all of Polishka. And I think before we talk about what Hilarishka has been doing to Wilhelm, I think I want to go back and address something that I feel like I started the Last Privilege Punishment, and in listening back to it in the edit, don't know if I've articulated clearly enough.
Let's have it.
So this, some of this I feel like is going to be repeating myself, but I think I want to be a little bit clear. As a member of the royal family, and as a, like, as a national product, bring the French Revolution back. I said I would.
Let's go.
I mean, not directly, but, like, what I was saying in that is, like, the idea of, like, being the idea of a figurehead monarchy wanting to have continuity with the past. It means that it is essential that you exist in perpetuity, which is a holdover from absolute monarchy of always needing an heir in order to pass on power. Like, power is still attached to this family, even if it is not, like, literal political power, like the ability to, like, raise an army or whatever. Like, that is still in the hands of parliament, but you are still born onto the world stage and have a clear responsibility to, like, not necessarily national security, but, like, national identity. The, like, your place diplomatically on the world stage, that's a huge part of what the royal family does. Is, like, represent Sweden to the world. And part of this system and this family that, like, needs desperately to continue existing, there is literally no conceivable way that I can think of that doesn't breed, at the very least, heteronormativity, and at most, like, deep-seated homophobia.
Yeah, I would go so far as to say that it's almost guaranteed to institutionally have homophobia. Now, I'm not saying that every member of the royal family ever has been homophobic, but the institution itself, I would go out on a limb here and say almost definitely homophobic.
Yeah, and I do believe, I think we mentioned on this podcast, like, the Swedish royal family in real life has said that they would accept queer members of their family. But also, I think I did play devil's advocate and be a bit pessimistic, I think, and was like, what else are they going to say?
I do remember that.
After a show like Young Royals comes out.
It's just, like, really funny to me that they made that.
It is.
So funny to me.
Yeah.
Like, the bare minimum, but it's so funny to me.
Yeah. But that being said, I hope listeners can follow our train of thoughts here and being, like, a situation where you are strongly expected to have children is a situation that prioritizes, I'm going to be direct here because this is just, I'm just getting into queer theory at this point.
Let's do it.
That prioritizes procreative sex, which prioritizes heterosexual relationships.
We're always bringing up sex on this show.
We are, but it is a very, it is a strong part of the show.
I know. I was making a funny.
I know. But that's, I think, I do not think I fully drew that. I don't think I was as, I think I touched on that last episode, but, like, I did not, was not as clear about it. And I think On the Table really helped put it together for me a little bit, in that I think the expectation in, like, high society, at least from the outside, is that they're very prudish and don't like talking about sex, which to some extent I think is true, but also at the same time, I take that back. I don't think it actually makes sense at all. Because if you're constantly thinking, even outside of the royal family, even among just very, very wealthy families, you are thinking about inheritance, which means you're thinking about dynasty, which means you're thinking about, like, the continuation of your family line.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all these things that do feel very, like, to use an English majory term, like, very Victorian. Like, they feel very 18th century, like 18th and 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, that is the relic that the royal family is trying to carry on, and that's what a lot of, especially, like, nobility in Sweden is mm-hmm. trying to hold on to. Like, you're passing, that involves, it really involves, like, the passing on of titles
mm-hmm.
that, like, still exist. Like, tracts of land that have been passed down through many generations. Like, inheritance matters across the board when you get to a certain level of wealth status in Europe and Sweden especially. And the idea that that wouldn't mean that, like, people who even are on the spectrum of considering not being in a relationship that would lead to biological children, like, produced the quote-unquote old-fashioned way, like, I don't know how else to phrase this, like,
just keep going. You've committed. You've committed to saying the old-fashioned way. Just keep going.
I think that should be the title of this episode.
The old fat. That's good. That's so good. I kind of hate perfect.
I think that matches Queen Derogatory for how funny it is.
That's so true. God. Queen Derogatory is my fucking life. I'm changing the title in our document right now.
The old fashioned way.
It's fucking hilarious.
Oh god.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
I'm not surprised that privilege punishments are some of my favorite discussions because it's just so my shit.
Yeah.
It's like this and purple and orange is like we really start getting down into like themes and symbols, and I'm just like, yes, yes. Yes. Analysis of stories on a level of like social commentary and etc. Like, so I guess we've established a lot of this already now, like a lot of stuff that like really needed to be said in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we'd be remiss to not at least touch on how August and Eric fit into this.
Mm-hmm.
And also, honestly, Felice too. If we wanted to really start stretching it out there, like we've placed Villa in this ecosystem. I think, and we to an extent, like we've already kind of touched on August being stand-in for the royal family's values, which means a stand-in for the like staunchest exclusivist ideology in terms of like. You can't sit with us. Idea. And, like, I mean, August is literally leading the On the Table.
Yeah, well, yeah. He's not only leading it on the table, he's, like...
Yeah.
Like, pressuring on the table.
Yeah. I mean, a fascinating moment that we haven't really touched on, because it's so tiny, but I've kind of wondered about it ever since we did this week, Alershka, is how August cuts Nils off. When he's sharing.
Yeah.
But I almost think that's like this like illusion of egalitarianism almost. Yeah. It's like you have the floor, but now you don't. Like now sit down. Like it's but it's like I'd say it's an illusion because August is the prefect and he's the one deciding who gets to speak and how long they get to speak.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I guess not necessarily who gets to speak, but like he is like who wants to speak next and then like targets Villa. Yeah. Like it's like
it's a masked like
yeah.
you get control over the situation.
Yeah, like he has a lot of power in the situation.
Yeah.
And I think the way Eric fits in is that Eric is facilitating August's power, and he has been since episode one. Or like bolstering it in, like, when Villa is questioning why he should be listening to August. Like, he's so annoying. Like, why do we have to even have to be nice to, like, why do we even like this? Why do you even like this guy? Mm-hmm. You have Eric. Does he like, I don't know if he literally says he's family, but also, like, I mean, I know I keep joking about it, but, like, Eric's a little, like, but his backstory. Mm-hmm. Like,
his backstory. He does say, but he's, like, he's family.
Yeah. And it's, like, he's, August has been through a lot, which means he can treat people like shit. Like, that's kind, in taking the most, taking Eric the most uncharitably I can, like, that's what he's saying. Yeah,
pretty much.
But it's, like, again, like, Eric would not think of it like that. He would think, yeah, August has deserved, he deserves his power by having been chosen as prefect and having paid his dues of now being a third year.
Mm-hmm.
And gaining the authority to make the people under him do what he wants. Like, it, the, this entire society does seem to be built on who is recognized as being the one with power, and you fall in line.
Yeah, pretty much.
And so, again, coming at this from a different direction, like, a society that breeds conformity is also probably a society more often than not that's going to be homophobic. Specifically, like, if that conformity is based in a social system that for centuries was based in a homophobic religion.
Big time.
It's just, yeah. Like, or like homophobic. Yeah, it just how it is. Like, there's an interesting dance that I will say that I think it has to be a cultural thing that I'm not getting, I feel like, potentially. That, like, and I get it. I get the get wanting to emphasize young royals' intersectionality.
Mm-hmm.
But efforts by some of, like, the actors and by some of the writers to be like, it's not really a story that has many homophobic elements. I agree and disagree. And I don't see many people talking about the elements of which I disagree with that statement, because there are ways in which, like, the system is homophobic,
mm-hmm,
because otherwise Villa wouldn't be this confused and anxious about just holding a boy's hand.
Yeah.
Like, he wouldn't be worried about behavior that he sees as, using a kind of a highfalutin English major term, but shows up a lot of time in queer theory, aberrant behavior,
mm-hmm,
like, against the norm that is established in his head, which is so distressing that it gives him a panic attack, because he sees a plaque that's like, you have the legacy, like, you carry it on, like. It's the idea of inheritance. It's the idea of you owe a responsibility to your family to be a certain way,
mm-hmm,
and to accomplish certain things. And when those certain things are producing an heir, which, like, he's the second son, so, like, that pressure is lesser. But also, it's like, you'll want to be better safe than sorry. That's why the heir and the spare exist.
Yeah.
Is like, you just have children so that there are options.
Yeah.
Which, like, sounds, we talked about
terrible.
We talked about last privilege punishment. Like, the Swedish parliament in the absence of an heir, has the full right to end the monarchy. Just full on by majority vote.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you need to have someone in that spot.
Yeah.
Unless
you're fully ready for, I don't even know how many hundreds of years. I don't know how long ago Sweden became a country. Of history. Just to be like, bye-bye.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, with the idea of it's all connected, thoughts I'm having right now that I think should be verbalized to kind of really put things in perspective, is that like the end of the monarchy would mean a fundamental change to how wealth moves in Sweden.
Holy shit. 1,000 years?
I mean, it depends on how you define it, probably. Margaret was just Googling the history of Sweden and like Sweden.
Whoa.
Because technically, depending on, well, the British monarchy technically started in, like a lot of people do, if you're starting with William the Conqueror, you're starting in 1088, I believe.
Holy, or like 1066, shit.
Or something like that.
1200 years? Holy fuck.
Yeah, because when was the Battle of Hastings? That's basically usually. Oh, 1066 is how.
Damn.
How long, like, England as an institution has existed.
God damn.
Europe be old. Europe is old.
Europe do be old. How old is the U.S.? Like 200 years?
Yeah. I want to study British literature, not U.S. literature, because literature is inherently tied with history, and it's like, I don't know if it's because I heard it so many times, and we were told about it like it should matter, like, but like American history is so boring.
Okay, American history is boring.
European sorry history anyone who's is... interested in very sorry to anyone who's really interested in American history, but it's just there's so much. And it's like, not that European history is much better in terms of like the yikes factor, but it's just like, well, there's,
okay, we never there's said like, that.
No, yeah, it will. Yeah, yeah, obviously. But it's like, I don't know. There's more drama. I don't know. More interesting drama. Anyways.
Europe history has drama. Anton 2023.
I'm obsessed with the Tudors.
It's so valid. I just like, can't just imagine a country doing the same thing for 1,000 years.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah. But to what I was saying, because I want to make sure that I emphasize this. No, yeah, you're good. Before we started listening, looking at the length of European monarchies, I was saying that like the end of the monarchy would mean a fundamental change to how wealth moves in Sweden. And what I mean by that is, like I said, it all comes down to inheritance. And if like the biggest of big cheeses stopped having like the most fundamental of titles being passed down, like,
mm-hmm.
and like the biggest, like, titles mean jack shit.
Right.
Like, because those titles are titles because they were given by a monarch at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the monarchy ends, then all titles become meaningless, which means, shit. I mean, maybe not, I mean, like, you can maybe, parliament can maybe declare that they still are in place, but like they become fully symbolic at that point, even more than they already are.
Yeah.
And so at the very least, the legal standing of your title becomes way more tenuous. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't know if I'm being a little alarmist, but like this just makes sense to me in terms of like how this would work. A lot of people at Hlerska do seem to be the children of CEOs.
Yeah.
So it's like, even if a lot of their wealth or a good portion of their wealth comes from like titled lands and stuff like that, or to some extent. Like, a lot of them are probably still, like, capitalist multimillionaires in their own right. But it does change things.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I don't know how much it changes for the average citizen, honestly, in Sweden. I mean, Swedish listeners, write in.
Yeah, get or how much it
would how much it would change, how much you think it would change. I don't know if, I mean, Sweden is anything like England. Like, they do think about their monarchy quite a bit, even if you're just kind of or deliberately don't think about it. Like, it's a part of your society that you need to kind of decide what your relationship is to it, or like you're going to have some sort of relationship to it. But I think it's really interesting to me talking about the end of the monarchy. Is like, it's a purely like existential question at this point, like, or just like, I don't know, Wilhelm II's son, and it's like I said, him not eventually having an heir is like, so many younger children of royal families did not eventually have heirs that any heirs at all, or like heirs that survived beyond childhood. And so it's like, it wouldn't be totally out of the ordinary, but it's also, they still tried for the most part. And it's like, it's the idea that you have to try, like the idea that you have to make the attempt, that is the actual stressor. This episode really was all about sex. I'm not sorry.
I am.
It's like, systems of inheritance inherently intersect class and sex.
Let's talk about sex, baby.
Monarchy especially.
Did you know they're making another Mean Girls?
I didn't know that.
I think they're just making the musical into a movie, but I still feel like it's relevant.
Oh yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
I got a text from one of my friends while I was at work, and it was just new Mean Girls, and I went, huh?
Yeah.
Hadn't talked to her in almost a month. And I went, thank you for this intel, but I'm gonna need a little more background info here.
How did that connect with?
Well, because I was thinking about Pitch Perfect.
And then Mean Girls, obviously.
Yeah, because in my brain, they're kind of.
No, I mean, like, not the I same, do get,
but.
Like, I get it, which I don't know how relatable this content is for the, like, 70% of our audience that is not from the United States, but a lot of our audience is at least English speaking, so it's like, you probably, I think
everybody should watch Pitch Perfect.
Mean Girls and Pitch Perfect.
I think everybody should watch Pitch Perfect. It is, yeah. Anything that was made before 2015 does not politically correct, like, hold up politically correctness wise, but it's a classic.
So I think that's all we have to say, unless you have anything more about privilege punishment and the idea of, yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, because everything else with royal family related has been stuff that I feel like we've talked about in other episodes, and be like, yeah, we've waited for privilege punishment to continue this discussion, but we basically said all we needed to say in those ones, so.
Yeah, because we do this thing where we get to the end of our point, and then we're like, we should table this for later.
Yeah. I'm always worried we're just gonna forget certain points that we said we were gonna table for later. But
that's okay. Somebody will get us in the DMs.
Yeah, and that's what Flot is for.
And that's why you check the DMs.
We can't cover everything. Ultimately, it is something, which is something that I feel like I shouldn't have to say, and no one's really gotten us, no one has gotten us for this, really. Like, we say we are painstaking dissections, And we do mean it, but it's like even the most painstaking dissection is going to miss something. Like no one can, nothing can be perfect. And it's like this, that is something that haunts me sometimes, is like, is there things that we would have wanted to say? But it's like, if you hadn't noticed, we are going at a glacial pace through this show. A pace that is not advisable. And I've not seen any other show that like covers a media property go this fucking slow.
That's because nobody's as insane as we are.
Through a show that has so little content.
Nobody's as insane as we are. That is why.
No, but we have started getting people being like, I'm binging on your content, which is so heartwarming.
It really is.
Especially since you've been able to truck through the first episode.
Yeah.
Ready to take us out? Ready to take us? Oh, wait. I take
You're
us
taking
out.
Us out. Are you ready to take us out?
I am. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to keep up to date with when we release new episodes and other pod-related announcements, you can check out our Instagram, at People Don't Talk About, or our threads at the same handle. Our next episode will be Purple and Orange, relating to symbols and other miscellaneous motifs in Season 1, Episode 2. Stay tuned. And with that, all that's left to say is, let's start a revolution, baby!